Welcome to Prognosis. I'm Laura Carlson. It's day 17 since coronavirus was declared a global pandemic. Cases in the United States soared to more than 85,000, making the U.S. the world leader in COVID-19 cases. On today's episode, the coronavirus detectives. But first, here are the top stories from today. The U.S. Senate passed a historic $2 trillion relief package late on Friday morning, which promises to deliver payments and benefits to individuals, businesses, and states affected by the pandemic. Italy had its deadliest 24 hours, recording almost 1,000 fatalities from the virus in one day. Spain's death rate also soared. Cases are jumping in the United Kingdom, and the U.S. raced past China to become the country with the most cases in the world. Meanwhile, in China, where the outbreak began, virtually all the latest cases came from people arriving from overseas, prompting the government to temporarily suspend the entry of foreigners with valid visas and residence permits. In the U.S., a deal to produce life-saving ventilators at a massive scale faltered as President Donald Trump attacked manufacturers. Car makers General Motors and Ford, as well as medical device manufacturer Ventec Life Systems, were set to ramp up production of the breathing machines, waiting on the Trump administration to place orders and cut checks. But then, the president published a series of angry tweets, accusing GM of moving too slowly and charging too much, calling on the company to produce the machines in an Ohio plant it no longer owns. Later, GM said it would stop waiting on a federal contract and produce the machines at an Indiana plant. GM says it can eventually ramp up to making as many as 100,000 ventilators per day. Other car makers are contributing to the effort to mass produce badly needed supplies. Toyota is planning to use its shutdown car plants in the U.S. to make masks and face shields. The company said it would start producing these items early next week to supply hospitals near its plants in Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, and Texas. It's also finalizing deals with medical supply companies to make ventilators and respirator hoods. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson reported on Friday that he had tested positive for COVID-19 and was suffering symptoms including a fever and persistent cough. The United Kingdom is seeing an overall surge in cases, with deaths from the virus jumping 31%. And now, for our main story, the coronavirus detectives. If you wanted to learn everything you could about an organism, a good place to start would be its genome. The genome is the complete set of genetic information found in the DNA of any and every organism, whether that's a human being, a plant, or even a virus. And inside hundreds of viral genomes from patients around the globe, there may be clues to where the infection came from, and most importantly, where it's going next. A little-known geneticist in Seattle has become something of a CSI detective, unraveling the origins of COVID-19 in the U.S. Could his research hold secrets to a better understanding of the disease? Some policymakers seem to think so. I talked to Bloomberg's Bob Langreth for more.
Scientists around the world have been trying to analyze COVID-19, figure out exactly where this virus came from. And you've been talking to one of these scientists, Trevor Bedford, and I was just hoping you could tell us a little bit about his research just to start off.
So he is one of he's at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, and he's one of a new breed of epidemiologists that doesn't do kind of the shoe leather work that's traditional for epidemiologists, which is tracking all the cases and finding all their contacts. Instead, you know, he kind of sits by the laptop with a handful of collaborators around the world and waits for new genome sequencing data from patients that have had the virus for it to come in. So he analyzes the genome data over time to see, you know, how the virus is mutated. And that gives him clues as to, you know, how it is spreading, where is it coming from, and what places are starting to have new clusters next.
So how can scientists predict where these clusters go and how they travel?
You can think of it sort of like a genetic family tree of the virus. As the virus spreads from one person to the next, there are occasional small mutations in the virus. And, you know, most of these mutations, they don't change how you're sick it makes people, or don't change anything functional about the virus, but they do allow the genetic detectives, the kind of genome genetic detectives, as I like to call them, to kind of track the virus in near real time. And his one of his big breakthroughs came 3 to 4 weeks ago at a time when a lot of people and public health authorities in the U.S. thought we had it kind of mostly under control. And as he was analyzing genomes from the virus case that was detected in a teenager in Washington, one of the first community cases, he found that it was almost identical to the virus in the very first Washington case in January. And that indicated to him very strongly, to Dr. Bedford, that the community spread in Washington was closely linked to that first Washington case in January, and that in fact, it had been spreading undetected in Washington for quite a few weeks. So basically, it was a kind of an early alarm signal you can get by tracking these viral genomes.
Yeah, and I'm hoping, perhaps, that this might actually help us predict where the virus is going next, and perhaps how long it will last. Are there elements to his research that give us some indication to that extent as well?
You know, you can't predict whether someone is going to get on a plane and fly to some new destination or sneak into some new destination and then that patient is sick and spreads the virus. It can't really predict that. But what it's very good at doing, this genetic work, is kind of piecing together seemingly outbreaks and case clusters that may appear on the surface to be unrelated because the patients that got sick around the same time in one geographic area, like in Washington, it didn't have any obvious contacts or points of contact. But when you look at the genetics and it looks very similar, that gives you an indication that the fact might be related and might have derived from some of the same original index cases. And that so it's kind of an early warning signal that helps supplement, you know, traditional epidemiology methods.
That seems to be a really important element of the fact that Dr. Bedford isn't working alone, but with this global team, and that the global team really allows him to get this almost real-time data about where the virus came from, the details of how it's spreading. How is he syncing up with this team that's scattered essentially across the globe?
Trevor Bedford is in Seattle at the Fred Hutch Cancer Center, and one of his main collaborators is at the University of Basel in Switzerland. So, and that's a 9-hour time difference. And then, as it happens, he also has another researcher in his lab who's from New Zealand and apparently got wanted to go back to New Zealand. So that researcher, as luck would have it, is working, you know, from home in New Zealand. So they have, as it turns out, even though it's a small group of people, they have people in three very disparate time zones. It kind of allows them to, you know, get and analyze data in almost real time as it comes in.
And how exactly are they sharing the data? Is this publicly available? Can anyone go and see the real-time research?
Dr. Bedford and his collaborators, they have software that was basically ready to go already. They've been working on this for a while. For influenza, for Ebola, and for other outbreaks. So they basically have software ready to go that can analyze and compare the different viruses and how they've mutated, you know, very quickly. That can, you know, give us some results in 20 to 30 minutes. So they have a website, a interactive website called nextstrain.org, and that is updated, you know, frequently with new viral data as it comes in. And they literally put up like these little, I call them virus family trees. The technical name is phylogenies, but they show like the different, you know, clusters of the virus and, you know, how they've mutated over time and like what parts of the world they've come from. And so it's a powerful technique. It provides, you know, circumstantial, not definitive evidence, but circumstantial, very strong circumstantial evidence for how the virus spread and which towns it has come from and gone to.
But it's not just this website. Dr. Bedford seems to have become a bit of a social media celebrity by sharing his work online.
Dr. Bedford is very good at using Twitter. And these Twitter threads, you know, he now has more than 170,000 Twitter followers, which is pretty amazing from someone who previously was an obscure computational biologist, you know, known to people in his field, but, you know, not outside his very technical field. And now he's being followed by public health experts around the world, including former FDA commissioners, as being kind of one of the most prescient commentators, you know, on what's happening with this virus.
How do you see maybe policymakers starting to use and apply Bedford's work more broadly, again, to hopefully stop the spread of the virus more generally?
He told me he was in regular contact with people both at the CDC and the public health authorities in his state, Washington, because obviously Washington was the first state to be heavily hit by the coronavirus in the U.S. Obviously, it's been now surpassed by New York. So he's in regular contact with public health authorities. And basically, although they're putting all the data out there, I mean, it is the genome data. It's kind of like a new thing for epidemiologists. The traditionally trained epidemiologist, might not have as much expertise at interpreting it. And so he's in regular contact with the health authorities, to tell them, hey, here's what I think this means, this new set of data, here's what you make of it, here's what you think of it. So he's regularly talking to the various health authorities.
Bob Langer, thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
And that's it for the Prognosis Daily Edition. For more on the coronavirus crisis from 120 bureaus around the world, visit Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. And if you appreciate the podcast, please take a moment to rate us and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts to help more listeners find our global reporting. The Prognosis Daily Edition is hosted by me, Laura Carlson. The show is produced by me, Topher Forges, Jordan Gaspore, and Magnus Henriksen. Reporting by Jason Gale. Original music by Leo Sidran. Our editors are Francesca Levy and Rick Schein. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts.